The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
We're back for the final hour and 2 minutes of the show. It's 10:57. I'm Randy Corporan. Good to have you here. And let's get back to Joe in Arvada. Joe, the point I was making is I dug my dad out on that snowy early morning, and he wasn't grumpy about it, but he wasn't pleased. And he drove me back to the police station, and I asked him to hold the bike up. And, you know, I'm a 11-year-old kid. He's a grown man, good shape. And the bike just about dumped on him. He had no idea that we were manhandling around that kind of weight, and there was just no way to plow it through a powdery snow early in the morning. So that was the first time I got to throw my papers from the back of a station wagon, and it was sweet. And he told me, don't get in the habit of expecting this, son. This is your job.
Yeah, Mom had a station wagon. She helped me a few times. I remember that. Well, the thing is if you grew up here, you've seen the degradation of our city. I mean, I grew up in Aurora and Denver. I lived in both. I now live in Arvada and Westminster. I am so scared we're about to lose the whole metro area to something like, you know, the Californication of Colorado. What happened is exactly what happened to Ted Cruz. They get in Washington, or they get in power, even here, the mayors, and power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. The reason Donald Trump was so different is that he had already made his bones. He was already a billionaire. He didn't need to run for office. You know, Ted Cruz is, I hate to say it, he's gone after power. He saw his opportunity to try to get a hold of the Republican Party and run for office this next time, and that's what that move was.
Well, you know, he apologized strongly for it. So it could have just here's what Ted Cruz said about it. I should have pulled this clip, but what he said is that he said, I always refer to people who attack police, which we saw, you know, all through the summer of fire and death from BLM and Antifa, all through the cities on fire and police stations with the doors being chained shut, everything else. And he referred to those attacks on law enforcement and first responders as terrorist acts. And so his statement, his excuse was, you know, that's been my habit when I refer to people who make attacks on police. And he said it was wrong in that context because what the left, the lies the left and their supporters in the mainstream media have said about January 6th. So I'm willing to give them a little bit of a pass on that.
Well, I get it. But see, this is at a local level. We're having this happen here with, you know, I'm not going to name names, but with media, conservative media, and some conservative politicians too are getting on the bandwagon with the left, because they see it as an opportunity to kind of shore up their power. And here's the problem with that is that the January 6th movement was a protest, and yes, one, it got out of hand. I agree with that. There was things done that were way wrong, but it in no way it should be equivalent with things like 9/11 or with the riots in the summer of 2020. There's no way that they were the equivalent. 40 people were killed in those riots. There were police officers shot and killed. The only person that died on the January 6th was Ashley Babbitt, shot by a police officer wrongly.
Unarmed, and posing no threat.
Unarmed. Yeah, how can you equate 9/11, where 3,000 people were attacked by planes hitting it? It's just so absurd.
Joe.
So when you conservative talk show host, not you, Randy, but if any conservative talk show host gets on that bandwagon, what you're doing is fueling the left to get into this this idea that they're the same. They are not the same. Protest is not the same as a riot that, or a terrorist attack that kills 3,000 people.
Yeah, and you know, Liz Cheney and the January 6th Commission have no interest in Ashley Babbitt. They have no interest in that top 20 FBI most wanted clown who was inciting people to get over to the Capitol the day before. You see that video, what's his name, Ron Epps or something like that.
And Ray Epps,
yes.
Why isn't Ray Epps, you know who should be charged with sedition and an insurrection? The FBI.
Yeah, if the Republicans get the House, we're going to get some answers. I have very little doubt about that. But that first video of Ray Epps where one of the Trump supporters is saying, Fed, Fed, Fed. They were calling him out already. Don't know if he was a Fed. No evidence of that yet. Interesting that he's top 20 most wanted after January 6th and then somehow scrubbed from the FBI website. But they identified him as a plant. There is no question about that.
Okay. So, but my point is this, and I think we should start ramping up this call. If there's one person that should be called out for insurrection, it's Ray Epps.
Yes.
He should be called out for insurrection. He is the one that should be charged. Now, why isn't he being charged? Because he was a plant by the FBI.
Very likely. All right. Hey, I've got an 11 o'clock guest, Joe. Really appreciate thanks for carrying over in that break and finishing the conversation with us. Always a pleasure. Look forward to our conversations throughout the year in the show.
Thanks, Randy. Thanks for what you do.
Yeah, you better believe it. Bye-bye. Joe's line is open. It's the only one we got. 303-696-1971. 696-1971. And with regard to creepy, sleepy, zombie, pedo Joe, the putative president, Biden and Kamala Harris, for God's sake, talking about, you know, comparing these days to the Civil War, to 9/11, to any of, you know, Pearl Harbor. These people are just activist, ideological zealots reading what is put on the teleprompter for them to say. So it's hard for me to even imagine that left wingers could take that garbage seriously yesterday. We may get a chance to talk to one of those aforementioned left wingers if they stick around. But right now, so privileged to bring on for the first time this year, Wake Up with Randy Corporan, my good friend, filmmaker, documentarian, all around good guy and patriot, Joel Gilbert. Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year. Great to be back. Thanks, Randy.
Good to have you as well. And something that caught my attention and had me thinking about getting you on today was apparently, you know, you and I have talked quite a bit in the past year about your film, The Trayvon Hoax, Unmasking the Witness Fraud, et cetera, et cetera. And apparently there's been some litigation around Trayvon Martin and all of the lies that spurred the BLM movement and all of the damage and rioting and BS that's gone on for the last several years. And I thought it'd be great to have you come on to talk about it.
Yeah, I'd love to update that. Well, people may remember from the Trayvon hoax, of course, I proved that the key witness of the prosecution, Rachel Gentel, the plus-sized Haitian girl who was 200 pounds heavier and a year older than Trayvon, claiming to be his girlfriend, and was on the phone with him and heard things that the eyewitnesses didn't see or hear, that she was a fake witness, that the real girlfriend was named Diamond Eugene. I found the girl. She's in the movie. And I proved a conspiracy between Ben Crump, Trayvon's parents, and even the prosecutors involved in putting up this fake witness to get Zimmerman framed and arrested and convicted of murder, which the jury fortunately saw through the ruse. So Zimmerman did sue all these gang of conspirators, Crump, Sabrina Fulton, the mother, he sued Rachel Gentel and Brittany Diamond Eugene for civil conspiracy and defamation. It got moved from Polk County to Leon County, Tallahassee area, and the COVID delayed it as well. So finally there were two hearings this week, and I was an observer on the Zoom hearings, and you can actually watch on video, everybody. And Ben Crump and Sabrina Fulton came with 14 lawyers, 14. I'm not exaggerating. There were 14 lawyers. asking for a dismissal of the case against Zimmerman's single attorney, Craig Sonner, who did a great job. And on Wednesday, the judge dismissed the defamation claims against Rachel Gentile and Sabrina Fulton, even though clearly in the past couple years they've continued to maintain the lies and conspiracy that Rachel Gentile was on the phone with Trayvon and all the lies. And then yesterday was the final hearing regarding Ben Crump and his book that he wrote and published only a year and a half ago called Open Season, Legalized Genocide of Colored People, this outrageous race hoax book that he came out with. It was published by HarperCollins, owned by the Murdochs of all people. And HarperCollins and Ben Crump were asking for dismissal of that defamation, even though there were clear defamatory claims against Zimmerman in this book. And same thing happened yesterday. 14 lawyers showed up from HarperCollins, from insurance companies. Sabrina Fulton was in on it. There was Tracy Martin. Crump was in on the thing. And the judge, unfortunately, also dismissed that. So, you know, the biggest race hoax of them all, the mother of all race hoaxes, these guys, you know, Zimmerman tried to take them to court and ultimately failed due to the judge excusing what was clearly defamatory behavior.
Well, you see a lot of interesting verdicts. I'm becoming quite an expert in defamation cases and involved in them. And some of the juristry, some of the judges' decisions, some of the logic and some of the stretches are, they really boggle the imagination. But I'm glad to know that defamation will proceed on this ridiculous book, Open Season, Legalized Genocide of Colored People. I thought we couldn't say colored people.
Let me clarify. The judge threw that out as well.
Oh, that all got thrown out. Okay.
They all got thrown out. So in two different hearings, it all got thrown out. Mm. And unfortunately, the legal system has just become so corrupted. I mean, look at the Kim Potter case, which we followed.
Yeah.
Clearly an accidental shooting, and she's charged with intentional murder. I mean, you could even say the McMichaels case in Brunswick, Georgia, where they were trying to do some kind of misguided citizen's arrest, got convicted for life for intentional murder, which they obviously had some boneheaded idea to stop this guy, but it was Arbery that came around and tried to take his gun away from him, and that's when the shooting took place. I don't think they intended to go murder him, but that's what they're convicted of. Kim Potter, clearly accidental while a felon was fleeing. I believe that if someone resists arrest, like Dante Wright or even George Floyd, if you resist arrest and then an accidental death occurs, which was the case for both of those, it should not be a criminal matter. It should be a civil matter. You could fire the officer. You could sue them for their insurance money. But it shouldn't be a criminal matter when a criminal is resisting arrest and there is an accidental death.
No, it's very hard as a criminal defense attorney. That's a significant portion of our practice and the lawyers at my firm.
Yeah.
Very hard sometimes to suggest to people who have legitimate defenses, self-defense, or, you know, I didn't follow the Marbury case very closely, but I did see the video where it looked to me, I know they were confronting him and they thought he was, you know, running through a neighborhood, been seen on a construction site or something. But what I thought I saw was that he came around and was the aggressor. And so that didn't make any sense to me. This police officer, Derek Chauvin, being sentenced to 40 years when, you know, the science, the medical testimony presented was that, you know, he was not the cause of George Floyd's death. The overdose on drugs causing his heart to elevate, saying he couldn't breathe in the back of the police car. I have no patience or understanding or compassion for sitting there with a knee on that guy's neck for so long when he's down and there are other police officers around. That just didn't seem right to me.
Yeah, it looked bad. It clearly accidental. I mean, Chauvin, I thought he should have taken the stand and said, look, these maniacs were surrounding me, yelling at me and cursing at me, and I kept looking up and I didn't pay enough attention, and it was obviously an accident. He didn't intend to do it. Didn't intend to hurt anybody. Was certainly the case. But the difference in all these cases today is the fear of the lynch mob. They had in Brunswick, Georgia, you know, Ben Crump, Jesse Jackson, Sharpton were in the courtroom. They held a rally outside the courtroom. Same thing in the Derek Chauvin case. The jury has two choices. They can choose guilty or I'm a dead man walking. There's no choice for not guilty. They just figure, look, let the appeals court handle this. Why should my life be over and have these maniacs show up at my door because this officer sat on this guy for too long, or because Arbery turned the corner and tried to grab this guy's gun? My life has to be over. Let's just pass it over to the appeals court. I had enough of this. They get intimidated. So that's what we're all about today, is jury intimidation. And it started from the top. Remember, Chuck Schumer on the steps of the Supreme Court screamed and threatened Justice Kavanaugh, "We're coming for you."
Yeah.
You know, so and that was okay. So we've entered this era where a lynch mob can come into the courtroom and threaten the court and threaten the judge and the jury and get the media following the jury around, and most jurors are just going to say, "Hey, you know, why should I risk my neck? Let the appeals court handle it."
Yeah, you know, the defense lawyer mantra, what you learn in defense lawyer school is rarely do you have your client take the stand. And I'm just going back to what you said about Derek Chauvin, who should have testified on his own behalf. Kyle Rittenhouse would be convicted right now if he had not gotten on the witness stand. I believe that.
Yeah, and you saw the movie, The Trayvon Hoax. I mean, yes. George Zimmerman interviewed there. He tells a very credible story. You know, he debunks all the narrative of Ben Crump. He was not following him. He wasn't on a patrol. You know, he was going back to his car and he got jumped. I mean,
Trayvon was banging his head, the back of his head, into a concrete sidewalk on top of him.
Right, choking on his blood from
a
broken nose. He screamed for help 14 times, tried desperately to get him off of him, and at the end had to save his life. Now, I did talk to the jury forewoman in that case, which no one has ever done. She told me that they exonerated Zimmerman. This is the second exoneration after the police exonerated him. She said, at the moment that he pulled the trigger, was he in legitimate fear of his life? And all the jurors agreed on that, and they acquitted him. But she did tell me that it ruined her life, that she still lives in fear. She goes to the hair salon, and she knows that a lot of people in her community saw her in the courtroom, even though her name had never been released. But they recognize her, and she's just terrified to this day to walk around the community that someone's going to jump her. So you can imagine that was back then. Now the pressure on these jurors, the ability to dox people and get their names and photos out there, is just incredible. So it's a tragic turn for criminal justice and justice in general when clear accidents are now criminal. The next thing, I guess, we'll put surgeons, doctors in jail. What if a doctor makes a mistake with medication or a surgeon? You know, you do something wrong and someone dies, they start putting doctors in jail. The system we have is you can fire the doctor, you can get an insurance settlement, but we're not going to have doctors if you start jailing them for honest mistakes. Same thing with police officers. Why should they bother arresting people if when the person tries to flee, there's an accident of some kind and the person might be killed? Just let them go.
Yeah, no, it's a really terrifying time. You know, there's this element in criminal law called mens rea, your mental state. Did you have the mental state, the intention to go out and commit a crime? Were you there to do something wrong? And that just seemed to get completely thrown away with Derek Chauvin, who didn't start out the day thinking he was going to get to kill George Floyd, or Officer Potter, who had no idea that this violent felon would try and flee and that she would grab the wrong weapon. And she was devastated immediately on the scene. She did take the witness stand, and what I saw of it was not good. Her lawyers did not have her prepared. They didn't lead her down, you know, through the story in an effective way.
Yeah, look, it happens a lot. I mean, even these situations are typically pro bono attorneys or attorneys that have to raise money to pay them. Even, Mark O'Mara and Don West, the attorneys for George Zimmerman, I talked to them. They were largely nice to me. I did not throw them under the bus, even though I could have. But you look in those text messages that they had, and you could just, if you read the damn thing, you can see that Diamond Eugene is texting her photo to Trayvon Martin. That's the girlfriend. It's not Rachel Gentel. Now, had they discovered that, we wouldn't be here today.
And now, none of these people are up on charges of any kind.
No. But, you know, in their defense, the The prosecutors did withhold the text messages of Trayvon until just a little while before the trial. But you got pro bono attorneys that are pretty much saying, well, I better just do the minimum. I got another practice. I got other clients that are paying. I'll do the minimum here. And that's how you get Derek Chauvin's attorney, Kim Potter's attorney doesn't walk her through it properly, and you get just barely adequate defenses against a state prosecution where they've thrown millions of dollars to support a narrative that's not true at somebody that only has a pro bono attorney to try to save them.
Talking with Joel Gilbert, he's a political commentator, investigative journalist, documentary filmmaker. All of his films are streaming live. You can get them at right for free, right?
No, you got to go to Vimeo. I've got the Trayvon hoax. I've had that for free for some time because people are buying the book. I want you to buy the book also if you like the movie. That's
got
on
it.
YouTube.
Sure.
But you go to thetrayvonhoax.com, highway61ent.com. You can link up to all the films. And a lot of great investigative journalism. And, you know, everyone tells me once they see my films, nothing is ever the same for them anymore.
Well, without a doubt. I think you and I met for the first time when you were premiering Dreams from My Real Father, or maybe what was the other one? What did you premiere in Denver? No Place Like Utopia. That's what it was. And I've been so grateful for that friendship over the years now. Let's take the last couple minutes we have before the break to just look ahead. You're always fearless and willing to talk about anything and everything. And I was caught by a tweet that you put out, The old Biden socialist experiment is going just like all the others. Worthless currency, shortages, lying state media, political repression, and predetermined election outcomes. Didn't you know we're not allowed to talk about predetermined election outcomes anymore?
Yeah, that's but look, it's something I think they're working on a lot. The context I can give you, let's talk about the word plausibility, okay? Plausibility. When it's not going to be plausible for them to win the midterms elections unless there's a reason. So they're looking for plausibility, and that's what I think the January 6th CNN theater celebrations are all about. They need something to create a plausible scenario. So I think there's a good chance that these Democrat counties and Democrat vote counters, that they're not going to play fair. But it wouldn't be plausible for Democrats to win unless there was some reason based on everything going to hell. So I think you're going to see a Democrat win in the midterms, and the CNN and all the state media will interview people in exit polls, and they'll all say, oh, I was mad about January 6th. So that will be their story as to how anyone could possibly vote for the Democrats. That will be their story. They seem to be building toward that. That will be their excuse, and that will be the exit polling. And that kind of gives you a plausible reason as to how this could possibly happen, that people are voting for all the mayhem that the Democrats have created.
Well, if we keep the Biden election takeover bill from becoming law before the midterm elections, all of the things that are being put in place by RNC, by Republicans, conservatives, by activated mothers, school board members, et cetera, I think will prevent that from happening, but it is a definite risk. Last thing, and just real short answers on both these questions. We'll have you back to talk about them another time. You've been saying for over a year that you think Michelle Obama will be the Democrat nominee in 2024. Do you still feel the same way?
Absolutely no question. Look at her Twitter account. Every day she's running for president. She's got her autobiography out, Becoming. It's on Netflix also as a movie. And I think she's clearly the most popular Democrat, and she's preparing for the presidency. And I think you'll see her announce probably late. She won't announce after the midterms. It'll be, you know, well, there isn't really anybody, so I'm going to do y'all a favor and run. I think that's what's in the works for some time.
And final question, common wisdom, and this is really more insider stuff, but it's, you know, outside, I think folks sort of see it this way anyway. Donald Trump, the likely Republican nominee, could he, or is there anyone on the horizon who can beat Michelle Obama, according to Joel Gilbert?
It's going to be very tough. I think we need a female. I'd love to see a female candidate emerge, not Nikki Haley. But I'm concerned. I believe that they will charge. The January 6th committee will refer Trump to the Justice Department for criminal charges for, you know, disrupting a hearing. I think in New York they're going to charge him with overvaluing his assets or some crap. So I think they're making a big effort to keep him from running, and it may work. And if not, I think the public need to find, I would like to see a female candidate that could take down. It's going to be very difficult for a white male, older candidate to handle all of the racial innuendos that Michelle Obama would throw at them.
The Trayvon Hoax on YouTube, the website for all of the great films from filmmaker Joel Gilbert is highway61ent.com, highway61ent.com. Joel, always a pleasure. Thanks for kicking off the new year with us here in Denver, and I will talk to you again soon, my friend.
Great. Thanks so much.
All right. God bless. 1122. All right. We'll get back to your calls, 303-696-1971. My old friend David in San Francisco is standing by, and so my New Year's revolution is the hope, the prayer, the heartfelt belief that I will get through an entire phone call and conversation with David in San Francisco. We shall see when we come back on 710 KNUS. One of my favorites, just no doubt about it. Doobie Brothers, and it had nothing to do with their name or my propensities during that time of my life, I assure you. Anyway, welcome back. 1128, first show of the new year, was away for 3 weeks. Man, oh man, it is just too long to not get to connect with you. And it's so good to be back. Phone number here is 303-696-1971, 696-1971. Texter texted in and wondered, and I didn't see it in time, to ask filmmaker Joel Gilbert when we had him on the air about his next movie. And but his next movie and probably book to go along with it, I should have asked him that as well, is about his expected Democrat nominee for the presidency in 2024, Michelle Obama. And he said he expects that to be released in May. So, Alexa, there's the answer to your question. Now, that was a decent length break, and I had an opportunity to practice my old martial arts calming techniques, some deep breathing, a little bit of Nam-myoho, Renge-kyo, and a little, you know, dear God, help me, in order to get ready for this very next phone call. And I only set it up that way. I don't know David in San Francisco, but it has just gotten to be a habit that we can simply never get through an entire phone call because name-calling starts, it gets elevated, and we just have to move on. So my New Year's revolution is that I finish an entire conversation with David in San Francisco, who joins us now on 710 KNUS. David, Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year, Randy, and good resolution. I've always tried to get a clean point across, and you've never let me do that. Where I was going to go today, you're aware that the Supreme Court has decided to take up this issue of mandates on health care. And I don't know if you're familiar with the legal expression duty to care. You ever heard of that?
Not specifically, no.
Well, a few years ago, the Supreme Court, I'll say the corrupt Supreme Court, made a ruling that police have no duty to care. There was a guy outside of a baseball game who got in a fight with some opposing team, and he was getting the crap beat out of him right in front of a cop. And he pleaded with the cop to help put a stop to it, and ended up, the cop did nothing. The guy ended up with some serious injuries, and he ended up suing the police department. And the Supreme Court took up the case, saying that the police had no duty to care. They could watch a crime go on in front of them and have no duty to care. So in the case of an epidemic, a deadly disease, and in this case, Omicron is 70% as deadly as regular old COVID, and that puts it as deadly as the worst flu. The worst flu is 0.01 death rate, and COVID is 0.03. So if Omicron is 70% as deadly as regular old COVID, that puts it at 0.01, which is as deadly as the regular flu. So in this case, the new president, President Biden, has taken on the position that the U.S. government has a duty to care, and has a duty to help the citizens of America not die from an epidemic. And he's tried to make sure that all employees are covered and all schools are covered. Everybody gets a chance to get a free vaccine, not pay crazy amounts of money to profiteers, that everybody has the opportunity to get free vaccines, free testing. And so the corrupt have decided that the U.S. government has no duty to care.
So, may I respond?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, thank you. Interestingly enough, a Castle Rock shooting murder case was involved in that one of those Supreme Court decisions that the police do not have a duty to protect, where an unhappy father, some domestic violence, loaded up his kids in the back of a pickup, as I recall, it's been a few years, and drove into downtown Castle Rock and started shooting, I think, at the police station. And that was all part of some of that determination. The issue that should be before the Supreme Court, the issue that's been presented, is whether the federal government has the authority through the executive branch to order OSHA to create this business-wide mandate for businesses with 100 or more employees. It's not about the policy or what's good or what's right. It's what's legal and constitutional under the law.
So yeah, that's kind of wasting time, right? If there's a deadly epidemic, it's going up. What are we up to? Almost a million new cases a day now. For 2 years, the Trumpistas have been telling us that, the idea that it's a fake disease, that masks don't work, that vaccines are an affront to God, every excuse to not do the right thing. And they basically, see, what it comes down to is the corporate state. And when you realize that Mussolini said that citizens' only duty is to the state, and that when we broke free from King George III in 1776, we were subjects of the king. We had no rights. Our only duty was to the king. And we said, screw that. We're free. We're citizens here. We're not subjects. So now when the people, and about 70-80% of the population, are smart enough to know to get the vaccine and then not die for some stupid disease, but there still are people who believe in the corporate state.
One last question for you, Dave, and then I do have to let you go. I just discovered I'm going to have a guest on that I didn't think I was going to get today, Dr. Peter McCullough, who you will love given your stance on vaccines. But is it okay with you? What do you say to, for instance, my client, a 34-year-old Denver police officer, father of four, Jose Manriquez, who had COVID last year, a year before now, and serious case, got well, athletic, strong, young, healthy guy, got well, was mandated by the Denver Police Department to take the jab, and within 4 days he couldn't walk. Is that okay with you?
Well, if you remember in the very beginning of COVID, the Swedish health minister said, we're going to go for herd immunity. And they cut it off after.
You're not answering my question.
Yeah, I'm trying to answer it because I'm trying to answer it scientifically.
Well, I don't want to get into.
If you have,
I don't want to get into
disease.
Sweden or anything else right now, because all you got to do is stay in America. Look at blue states versus red states and how lockdowns and masks and mandates have worked. But I'm asking you: should an American citizen, like Jose Manriquez, have been forced, who had antibodies raging through his healthy young body and had been on the police force serving faithfully throughout the entire COVID pandemic before there was a vaccine, should he have been forced to take a jab? He did not get over it. He's probably permanently damaged.
Okay, well, according to Sweden, when they gave up on the herd immunity, they discovered that if you had a serious case of it, you would have antibodies, but the antibodies would fade. If you had a mild case, your antibodies didn't exist.
And how are the vaccines working, the so-called vaccines working?
Well,
now they're saying
8 weeks.
Hold
variant.
On. Now, don't interrupt. Let me finish. 8 weeks, 12 weeks, we're now up to four boosters. Was it the Moderna or the other guy's CEO who said, we're not sure that the fourth booster is really going to be enough? You talked about big corporate government, big corporate media. That's what this is. It's a money game. And the long-term consequences of these so-called vaccines are very, very concerning to me. Listen, we got through a full conversation. I've got to get it.
Corporate state.
You're welcome anytime. Appreciate it, Dave.
Don't believe the lies.
Thank you very much. All right. There's just no way to, you know, politely say goodbye. But anyway, it's 23 minutes to go until 12 o'clock. And I just heard from Dr. Peter McCullough. He is one of the experts. Surprised he's not banned on Twitter. I know it's coming, but he's at a health freedom event in Arizona, I think. And he said he'd squeeze in a few minutes with you and me here on 710 CAN-US. So we're going to take this break at 11:38 and come back with Dr. McCullough when we return on 710 CAN-US. Yowza! Going out with a bang. Final segment, Wake Up with Randy Corcoran, 303-696-1971 is the phone number. 20 minutes to go until 12 o'clock. Good-looking day here in the city. We're not going to get to 50, but we may be back in the 50s as soon as Monday. 'Tis a privilege to live in Colorado, even under fully Democrat control right now. So excited. I've been talking back and forth with him all week, and I knew he was at this Liberty and Health Alliance, one of the main speakers. He's one of America's top cardiologists. He has been a resource. The organizations that he's affiliated with, you know, we use America's Frontline Doctors and others in our litigations here in Colorado, trying to get people out of hospitals that are dying and not getting alternate treatment. Trying to stop the mandates on vaccines, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm so grateful to have a few minutes to spend with Dr. Peter McCullough. Happy New Year, sir. Thanks for taking a moment to check in with us here in Denver.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Really do appreciate it. And I was so grateful to Jenny Beth Martin from Tea Party Patriots to connect us. A couple of weeks ago, we were looking for experts and on and on and on. Give people some of your background. Tell us what you're doing out there at the Liberty and Health Alliance, and then we'll spend some time talking about COVID-19.
I'm a practicing internist and cardiologist in Dallas, Texas. I split my time between clinical care and research. The last 2 years, I've been completely focused on COVID-19, trying to bring America and the world an integrated approach to treating COVID-19 at home to prevent hospitalization and death. And I've been very, I think, fair, balanced, and also focused on vaccine safety and efficacy. Americans want to get information on COVID-19. They feel as if they've been stonewalled by our federal agencies now over the last 2 years.
Well, there's no question that they have. You know, my whole family, my kids, their spouses, my grandbabies, 3 years old and younger, have all been through the Flurona now. And we have access to alternative treatments, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, quercetin, along with, you know, zinc, vitamin D, all the things that work together to push this, stop this virus from invading your cells. And everybody within a couple of days was feeling great. And the federal government has not only not made these available to people, they've actually gone out of their way to stop people from even talking about it. How does that make sense?
It doesn't make sense. In fact, they're actively blocking through the American Medical Association, the American Board of Pharmacies. They're actually blocking appropriately written, clinically indicated off-label use of medication, including things like colchicine, doxycycline, budesonide, things we'd use for an asthma attack. Suddenly, somebody has COVID-19, they are being turned away at pharmacies, and they're being left to, in a sense, be untreated, then face the risk of hospitalization and death. Something's gone very wrong at the level of the American Medical Association, the pharmacy boards, all the major physician colleges, FDA, CDC, NIH. Something's very wrong.
It's absolutely frightening. Our law firm has been involved in litigations over the last few weeks trying to get people out of hospitals who are facing certain death, and the hospitals would not allow alternative treatments. And we just lost one of those men just a few days ago. It just broke my heart. Never got a chance to give him the right to try, which in Colorado is a fundamental right, the right to try alternatives when you've got nothing left to lose. And the hospitals stand in the way. Everybody stands in the way. It's outrageous. Now, you've taken the stance that these vaccines and the And all of the boosters are what are creating these variants. Can you talk about that from a scientific point of view?
Right. Let me just follow up on the hospital treatment, though. Right. I want to point your listeners to a paper that's published in JAMA, and the first author is by Burns. And Burns has concluded that the hospital protocols that are being followed are untrustworthy, that they don't give the risks and benefits of the approach, and they are not expertly reviewed. In fact, I don't consider ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, solumedrol, colchicine, full-dose anticoagulation, antibiotics. I don't consider that alternative at all. That's actually standard of care. Doctors should use shared decision-making with patients. They should share the decision together in the hospital. The patient is the ultimate one who decides what they get. It's called the principle of autonomy. People should demand their medical rights. They cannot be told that the hospital's protocol is the only thing they can receive. That's unacceptable at this point in time. They should point to the paper by Burns. With respect to vaccine safety and efficacy, like any other product, the vaccines have risks and benefits. And what's been shown now, good papers by Neeson, Mayo Clinic, Arcevedo down South America, mass vaccination has promoted these hyperdominant mutants, going from Delta and now on to Omicron. The only way we have an explosive mutant strain that comes on the scene and dominates things within a matter of weeks is because of mass vaccination. Omicron, what we're dealing with now, breaks through natural immunity. It breaks through the vaccine easily, and it's going to infect nearly everybody. We're overwhelmed right now with cases. It's a product of mass vaccination.
Talking with cardiologist Dr. Peter McCullough. And listen, almost everybody I know has been sick now. You know, we're calling it the flu-rona. And that includes a lot of lawyers. I'm a lawyer. A lot of lawyers are, you know, they're trusting the science, and they're vaccinated, they're boosted, and they are sick as dogs right now with flu-rona. And so it's just becoming more and more nonsense, everything we hear from the Supreme Court yesterday, the CDC. And I'm just hoping that America wakes up in time, because I fear long-term medical harm to people who continue to take these so-called vaccines.
Well, yeah, I completely agree with that. The Supreme Court has only two doctor affidavits to look at, mine and Dr. Jay Bhattacharya at Stanford. And I tell you, Sotomayor, I listened to her feed. She did not read my report. In fact, she was basically, in her statement, giving misinformation. She stated that there was large numbers of children on the ventilator, that the hospitals are overflowing. I literally checked in with our chief tech for critical care at my major hospital in Dallas yesterday, and there's very few cases. The hospital is quiet. So what was stated in the Supreme Court was basically a flagrant of misinformation that went to the entire Supreme Court. Historians will record basically a fear-driven and probably agenda-driven complete set of falsehoods put forward by one of our Supreme Court justices.
You talked about some of these studies, and you mentioned JAMA. And just for people who don't know, we're not talking about some, you know, right-wing, unscientific medical blog. You're talking about the Journal of the American Medical Association. That's JAMA.
And the paper says the hospital protocols are untrustworthy. Untrustworthy, meaning that it's too early to have protocols try to dictate to patients what should be done. Doctors and patients are free together to decide. Ivermectin as a very dynamic product in COVID-19 is a standard of care in Mexico, across South America, India, many parts of the world, in Japan. There's absolutely no reason why any American should be denied ivermectin or other high-quality products in the hospital. They're safe and effective, and people should demand, they demand high-quality care.
I am not a doctor. Everyone in my family who took either hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, and the way our doctor broke it up is if your symptoms are further along, ivermectin is more effective. She prefers hydroxy if you're early in the disease. And within 2 days, they were feeling better. 2 days.
That's completely my experience. I just had Omicron sweeps in my extended family, and I watched it happen in my household from age 5 to age 98. And I can tell you with Omicron, it replicates 70 times faster than Delta, and it closes the immunologic door on Delta. So for those who are COVID recovered, it's like a very mild, brief febrile illness. with a little bit of nasal congestion. It's easily handled with nasal washes with dilute povidone iodine or hydrogen peroxide. The povidone iodine basically kills the source of the fever at its root, which is in the nasal cavity. You've got to spray it up your nose, sniff it back, and spit it out. But we had some individuals in our family, particularly some older ones, develop some brief pulmonary involvement. I'll tell you, prednisone and ivermectin together, within a matter of days, it's over with. They got nowhere close to needing to go to the ER or be hospitalized. So we do need early therapy, and we should demand it.
Talking with Dr. Peter McCullough, and he's been at the forefront. Doctor, I've had a conversation with Dr. Robert Malone, tried to get him on the show since his Twitter feed was taken down and 60 million people watched his interview with Joe Rogan. He's been kind of hard to get. I fear that you're on the verge of censorship as well. So far, you've survived in places like Twitter. You've got almost 400,000 or at least over 300,000 followers, as I recall. How do we keep your voice, my voice, other voices opposing the corrupt, coordinated, Democrat-controlled media machine mantra from being silenced?
We have to work together, and I can tell you, thank goodness, or Ingram and Tucker Carlson and Sean Saucedo, Sean Spicer, yourself, and other key leaders in the media, where we're having an ongoing dialogue. We're giving America really data. Right now, I'm at Chase Field in Phoenix. We have a large crowd, and we are taking the scientific data to the people. And we're in large crowds. It's basically like a medical grand rounds. It's a scientific reawakening. And people, it's no opinion. I'm just giving the information and letting people basically be empowered with scientific information. We're 2 years into this. Can you imagine? Our CDC and FDA have not done a scientific review on how vaccines are doing. And yet everyone's being asked or, in fact, forced to take a vaccine, but they're given no information regarding how to even choose a vaccine, let alone what it will do to their body.
Doctor, we're going to run out of time very shortly. I've got a friend and client, 34-year-old Denver police officer, COVID, 2 years ago, you know, prior to vaccines. He's a young, healthy guy. He was seriously ill, came through it completely. So undoubtedly his body was robust with antibodies. And Denver police forced him to take the jab last August, and within 4 days, he could not walk on his own. We were on Fox News in the morning together. It led to calls from around the world to my law firm, from other people who were vax-injured, medical professionals who tried to help. What should people be aware of about the dangers of just randomly accepting the propaganda and taking these so-called vaccines?
Well, for young people his age, we worry first and foremost what the FDA tells us. The FDA warns people not to take the vaccines, young people, particularly men, because the vaccines cause heart damage, inflammation. Everybody should understand that. I published with Rose and myself in Current Problems in Cardiology from our U.S. data that the risk extends up to age 50 in men. 90% of the ones who have heart damage, so we have over 21,000 Americans now that have heart damage from the vaccines. That occurs in men. 90% are in men age 50 and below. The peak incidence now, a recent paper by Sharp and colleagues from Kaiser, shows it's between 18 and 24. So it's the college-age kids that are taking the most damage. In his case, he has neurologic injury, whether that be Guillain-Barré syndrome or transverse myelitis, another reason not to take the vaccines. These serious neurologic and cardiovascular complications need to be broadly warned to the population. People have to understand when they walk in and take the vaccine, there's little evidence to show any benefit whatsoever, and there's great evidence to harm.
And the evidence is clearly showing that they don't protect you from anything. The vaccinated, boosted people are getting sick just as fast as everybody else.
That's clear. At this point, Omicron's broken through natural vaccine immunity. We have no studies showing any significant protection from the vaccines with Omicron. Since we're 95% Omicron, I'm publicly calling for dropping all vaccine mandates and pausing the current vaccines since they've run out of protection.
Doctor, we really appreciate you squeezing out some time. Dr. Peter McCullough, is there a place people, yours is one of the two affidavits that were presented to the Supreme Court for the arguments yesterday. Is there a place people can go and read that?
Yes, it should be on the Supreme Court website. Judge Doughty in the Sixth Federal Court relied on the testimony, and actually in his decision, which is about a 40-page ruling, he specifically cites me and Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. We're both frequent contributors on Fox News for both Hannity and Ingram, as well as Tucker. And I can tell you, it's just fair balance. I just gave the courts my fair balance assessment of the vaccines. There's risks and benefits, and because they are still research, no one can be mandated to participate in research against their will.
Agreed. Doctor, how can folks help keep your voice out there? And you got 10 seconds.
There is a Give, Send, Go. If you look under my name, there's a picture of me on a stage that funds travel, IT. You mentioned keeping alive on social media. That takes resources, but it's happening, and people are very generous, and I'm very grateful.
God bless you, too, sir. Thank you for squeezing in some time with us here in Denver. I know we'll be talking again soon.
Thank you.
You better believe it. Dr. Peter McCullough. That was an unexpected surprise. All right. Well, that's the first show of the year. Kelly hasn't said anything. I think I'll be back next week. That's my intention. And don't forget, the Arapaho Tea Party meeting's coming up. I see about 10, 15 tickets left. So get to that Eventbrite site. Send me an email if you want to get in. We do run out of space every single month. Also, check out StopTheMandatesColorado.com. I'll be speaking there a couple of weeks from tomorrow with Ted Harvey on the west steps of the Capitol. It's all good. Always remember, please never forget. I'm Randy Corporan. God loves you. So do I. Happy New Year.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.